The following is a presentation of Project Independence and WCWP. Project Independence is the Aging in Place Initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. We provide programs and services designed to assist and support the older town residents who wish to remain in their homes as they age. If we don't currently provide a service, we will try and connect you to that service. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
Welcome to Project Independence and You.
Welcome to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan, and my co-host today is Otto Lowe's.
Morning, John. Good morning, Otto.
And we have a wonderful show today, and we have two special guests. But before we get to them, I usually don't read stuff. I want to read something this morning. And this is from Margaret Mead, who is an anthropologist. And one of her students once asked her, you know, what is the definition of civilization? And they were looking for the invention of fire or the wheel or whatever it is. And instead, Margaret Mead said that the first sign of civilization in any culture was a femur, that's your thigh bone, that had been broken and healed. Mead explained that in the animal kingdom, if you break your leg, you die. You cannot run from danger. You can't get to the river for water. You can't hunt for food. You actually become food so that other animals eat you. A broken femur that has been healed is evidence that someone has taken time to stay with that person, bound their wound, carried the person to safety, got them food, got them drink, etc. They saw them through the most difficult time. We are at our best, according to Margaret Mead, when we serve others. And actually, Peter, my partner, is the one who sent this to me, not knowing, planning for this show. But it is so true and it's so accurate. And today we have two guests on who are with hospice. The Mary Ann Tully Hospice Inn on Long Island, which is under Northwell. And with that, we have Jessica Dunn, who is the director of the social work for the hospice. And we have Kelly Tully. And Kelly Tully is the daughter, the youngest daughter of Mary Ann Tully, who the hospice is named after. And actually, Mary Ann Tully died 15 years ago, died much too soon. But the legacy lives on with such a phenomenal hospice. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about hospice, and we're going to talk about the Tully family and what they've done on Long Island. I'm going to start with Jessica. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning.
I would like to start with a general definition of what hospice is. A lot of people don't know.
Sure. So hospice is a philosophy, right? It's a end-of-life philosophy about the way we're going to deliver care to a patient and what the goals of care really are. So a lot of people define hospice as a place, and sometimes it is. In the example of the Mary Ann, Tully Inn, it is. But hospice in general is a philosophy about providing comfort care and quality of life care to people who have a life-threatening illness, a terminal illness. So hospice can be, you know, for a year length of time, it can be for a couple of months, it can be for a couple of days, whatever the patient's goals and needs are. So really in hospice, we're looking to manage symptoms to provide quality of life. We're not looking to cure anything. So we're looking to enhance someone's quality every day and to make sure that they have the death or the end of life experience that they wish to have, that it's really patient driven.
It's cool. So important for them to have peace. Just one second, Otto. Now I just want to introduce Kelly, and then we'll go to Otto. And from Kelly, what I'd like to know, just in a little conversation, and we're going to go back and forth, how did your family get involved in such a worthy endeavor as the hospice?
Well, my mom, I was a teenager, 13, 14 years old, and she had raised 7 kids, and she wanted to do some volunteer work. And she ended up volunteering as a caregiver for hospice. And I think it just grew there from her. That's what my mom did. She got herself involved in something and she made it bigger and better.
Perfect. And then obviously after your mom died, but then we're going to talk about that. Yeah. The Tully family then stepped up. Ada, do you have a question?
Yeah. As I mentioned offline, we're involved with hospice right now with a family member. who decides that you are now in hospice, if you will? Do I, as the patient, does the doctor, who kind of gets the ball rolling that you are in hospice? Like in some cases that I've been involved with, the patient themselves really don't know they're in hospice. They've never were told. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, how's it start?
Sure. It can start a couple different ways. It can definitely, it's best started by the patient's physician and a physician that they would have known for a period of time. That's the best case scenario. It can also be started by if a patient's in the hospital and that's deemed by the case manager or the palliative team or the doctor involved in the hospital care. And the patient themselves can also, start the referral process. But once a referral is placed to hospice, whether it's by the family, the patient themselves, a doctor, a case manager, then the patient and the family are definitely talked to about whether they want to elect hospice coverage. So it's supposed to be a patient's decision, if they're able to make a decision for themselves, to elect that, because it is a benefit. It's a Medicare benefit. So the patient themselves, if they have the ability to make their own decisions, is the one that should be making that decision for themselves. But a doctor would have to certify that they would be hospice eligible.
Unfortunately, sometimes patients probably are not able to make that decision, and somebody has to make it for them, yes. Which is what we're involved with. The patient just can't do it. They can't make the decision.
But in my opinion there, Otto, if a person is not basically awake or they're in a coma and they can't make that decision, and Jessica, you can come in, I think hospice is less important. I think hospice is important for the person who knows they're dying, but is cognizant of the fact that they're dying. If you need a guardian to sign the paper, whether you're in the hospital or in hospice, it makes no difference. But if you know you're dying and you're on morphine, it's nice to have somebody come in, touch your hand, give you breakfast, and tell you what's going on in the outside world. That's how I look at hospice.
Well, I think it's important for kind of everyone along the spectrum. There's a lot of patients who, might be able to participate in conversation, might be aware of who they are and their immediate familiar surroundings, but they might not understand medical decisions or, the full extent to what their disease process is. So for those patients, that might be someone where their healthcare proxy might make the decision for them. I think hospice is really important when people are, very sick and maybe not able to respond very much, because that's when families have a very difficult time sitting and waiting and caring for them. And that's where we find that we can really be supportive in telling them they might not be able to respond to you, but they can hear you. They might not be able to respond to you, but they can hold your hand. So we do the whole trajectory. And if we can start out with a patient that can respond to us, can talk to us, can know who we are, then we can find out what their end of life goals are and help the family to feel good about how they're continuing to advocate for them and honor their wishes at the end of their life.
Perfect. I'm going to shoot back and forth because we have an organization like hospice, but also it has to be paid for. And I know that the Tully family had their golf outing this year, but it was virtual. Mm-hmm. And still successful, Kelly, excuse me.
We didn't do anything this year, but we still raised a significant amount of money. We did nothing.
Oh, I thought you did something. Okay.
No, it was just we did nothing. A matter
of you guys reaching out via letters or something? Or
well, so the process of planning the golf outing started, and we were hoping to be able to do something, but in the end, we couldn't because it wasn't... people are paying for something, you want to give them a service,
right?
But it was almost easier not to give them a service than to offer them minimal. And, we offered people refunds and they didn't want it back. They were willing to, continue to support hospice another year without, getting their golf round in.
Right. But you see, something like that is also, I mean, it's not only what the hospice is providing, which is tremendous, but here you and your family and your friends who have you reached out for. And I believe the number was like $160,000, $170,000 for this year.
We raised over $200,000 this year.
Over $200,000. And nobody got anything for it. What they got was they know they were helping another human being.
Right.
And that's the best gift you can get, that you sat at night and said, guess what? I'm fortunate enough to write a check for $100,000, $500,000, $5,000, whatever. And I don't need it, but maybe someday I will. And when I am in that need, I can call an organization that Jessica's involved in and say, what do I do next? I have to get my mom, I have to get my brother, you know, or somebody in there. It's tremendous that, and I know there's other people involved in, and so I'm not just saying Kelly's family, but for this particular place, how it has come about, I think it's tremendous. And it has to be stressed. One other thing, and again, we have plenty of time, but, and we'll tell the story, we're going to have a break coming up, believe it or not, is you guys, and this goes to Jessica, have a very liberal, not crazy, but liberal visiting program, which is so important, knowing that a person's going to die, and I'm saying now because of the pandemic, I'm not talking normally, in normal times, I don't know what the schedule is, but everybody shares it. Now it's terrible when you put a person into a hospice or a hospital and you may not see them again and you get a call a couple of weeks later. You guys have done, you know, with screens and plexiglass and everything. Just tell us about that.
Sure. So so I work at Hospice Care Network, which is the larger organization, and the hospice, the Mary Antelli Hospice Inn is a program within that. So at the Hospice Inn, pretty early on in the COVID times, our director there, Darren London, was very bothered that...
You know what I'm going to do? I'm sorry, Jessica. I thought we were going to be able to get this in. But we got to go to the break. But we're coming back from the break. We're going to start with that. You're listening to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.